Coming up on, what is it, April 12th, I believe. April 12th through the 14th, as a matter of fact, is a convention having to do with Wisconsin Lakes. It's the title of it is Wisconsin, the 2011 Wisconsin Lakes Convention, Speaking for Lakes. It's going to be held on the 12th through the 14th at the convention, Key Convention Center?
KI.
Is it called KI? KI Convention Center in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And you're going to have a chance to see and hear how the collaborators of arts and sciences can speak for Wisconsin Lakes. We'll talk about that conference a bit and our convention. We'll also talk about the challenges and opportunities for our Wisconsin Lakes with our two guests, Eric Olson and Patrick Goggin, our lake specialists with the University of Wisconsin Extension Lakes Program. They're based in Stevens Point. They drove down from Stevens Point this morning, if I'm not mistaken, to be with us today by phone. It's always great to have people in the studio with me, and I'm really appreciate them driving down from Stevens Point to Madison to be with us today. You may have some questions about our lakes, some of the challenges and opportunities, maybe some experiences to share. What role do lakes play in your enjoyment of the Wisconsin outdoors? You own property near a lake. We live on a lake right now, in Lake Monona, and we try to do some things to keep the lake healthy. I wonder what you do. Those are some things we can talk about with them and a whole lot more. Join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post a comment on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show as well. Eric Olson, welcome.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah, great to have you with us. And Patrick Goggin, thank you so much
for
being with
us. Good morning, Larry. Good to see you.
Did you have a good drive down today or this morning?
Yeah, pretty uneventful. Seeing a lot of the migratory birds kind of kicking around, flying around in the somewhat wet and somewhat frozen landscape out there.
A few turkeys, I imagine.
More cranes we saw, I think. Cranes and geese.
Well, that's a good sign when you say you've seen a lot of cranes. Well, tell us how you each got involved in lake issues. How'd you get involved, Eric?
Sure. I started getting involved when I was working with some communities in northern Wisconsin that were doing land use planning. And I was up there as a graduate student in Washburn County, far northwest Wisconsin, and started working on projects with lake organizations that wanted to see how they could change their land use plans to make sure that they were protecting their lake resources in the long run. And that really started me on a path of exploring extension education and community development and how we could really get citizens involved in taking a leadership role protecting lake resources.
That's pretty cool. Patrick, do you have a similar kind of path or not?
Yeah, similar. Actually, the first lake I fell in love with was near my hometown, Neenah, Lake Winnebago. So it started earlier with my paper route that stretched along the expanse of Lake Winnebago and getting through things like lake fly invasions and piling ice this time of year, that kind of thing. To the more contemporary times, for a while I was a county conservationist up in Vilas County, very lake-rich area of the state, of course, 1,300 lakes, and so bit my teeth into lake issues up there, and 3 years ago came to UW Extension in a statewide capacity.
That's great. I tell you, I'm always concerned. I guess as you look, you'll see some lakes where there are, you know, issues of one sort, other lakes where there are issues of another sort, some lakes that don't appear to have too many issues. But how would you, what kind of bill of health, let's put it that way, would you give our Wisconsin lakes?
Well, interestingly enough, in 2007, the Environmental Protection Agency did a national lakes assessment. And we had about 40 lakes here in Wisconsin that were looked at, as well as other states, other lakes around the states. And our bill of health overall was pretty well here in the state of Wisconsin. That's not to say we don't have some issues with nutrients or with lakeshore development, for example. That's a big stressor on our lakes and something that was teased out in the National Lakes Assessment. Overall, we've been covering trends in the state with our citizen volunteers since the middle 1980s. So back in 1986, I think we got our first volunteers out. I think we had about 130 volunteers at that time. Now we're ballooning towards almost 3,000 volunteers
out
there. Yeah, and they help collect data on our lakes and and overall the trends have been, in most places, moving in a positive direction in terms of keeping our lakes clean. That's not to say we don't have some issues. For sure, they're out there in some water bodies.
Yeah, absolutely. So now these volunteer, what do? They collect water samples? Do they observe? What do they do?
Inish, go ahead, Eric.
Citizen volunteers take on all those responsibilities. They go out and actually pull water samples and send them into labs to be analyzed to figure out what chemicals and nutrients are actually in their lakes. They also go out and do make observations of just how clear the water is. And increasingly, we're getting volunteers who actually want to know what's going on with their aquatic plants. And this is driven by their concern about invasive species or plants that don't belong in our Wisconsin lakes. And so they're familiarizing themselves with which plants do belong, and when should they be appearing in the lake. And so people are becoming much more familiar, I think, with the diversity of life that's found in their lake so that they can really recognize when something's out of place, when something doesn't belong.
I want to give that number again. If you'd like to join in with your own question or comment, reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page and post a comment there at the Larry Mueller Show. Yeah, I think invasive species, be it a weed or some sort of fish, perhaps, or crayfish or something like that, those are issues I think that people can kind of see. And in some ways, it's good that they can see it.
Yeah, certainly we've seen, like, for example, the carp, the Asian carp that are moving up the Mississippi River system. This has caught a lot of people's attention because of their behavior when they run into a boat on the riverway. They are prone to jumping out of the water, sort of a defense mechanism that they have. And people actually can be injured by these fish when they're jumping out of the water. That really catches people's attention, but what they don't see is what's going to happen to the aquatic ecosystem, the whole food chain that's going to be disrupted by these new species as they come in. And so there certainly are, they get your attention, and hopefully people then take the next steps to take preventative actions and try and limit the ability of these species to move around. And in most cases, these species aren't really invading Wisconsin on their own. They're doing it because they're getting some assistance from humans, the types of activities that we do.
Well, there's so many issues we can talk about. I know Greg and Adam are both up with some good questions. Let's go to Greg first here. Greg in Madison, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hey, Larry. I have a friend, and he took me up to Fish Lake, and he showed me how the water levels were rising there. And then he also said that neighboring Crystal Lake was maybe under some sort of DNR order not to allow people to build there, but they were actually trying to buy the houses, apparently because of the rising water levels. And I was just wondering if you had any idea why that was happening.
Patrick, anything on that?
Yeah, so we've had some interesting times here climate-wise in the state, haven't we, over the last 7 or 8 years. And in the lower part of the state, we've actually had greater rainfalls and lots of high water. Conversely, in the northern part of the state, it's been drought. So areas like you're talking about, Crystal Lake, the groundwater recharge is perhaps higher than ever in portions of the southern part of the state, so much so that those aquifers are full, and the recharge from spring runoff and other rain events is getting to the point where those lakes are actually rising. And Crystal Lake, if it's the I'm not sure what county, there's several Crystal Lakes across the state, but if it's the Crystal Lake I'm aware of in southern Wisconsin, it's had groundwater feed it to the situation where it's going over its normal, over ordinary high water mark, and a serious situation for homeowners associated with that lake.
Go ahead, Eric.
Well, I'd point out that some of our lakes don't really have a natural outlet or a stream where the water would just flow out of. They're these seepage lakes, and we've only been in Wisconsin European settlement and building houses for a good 150 years or so, a little bit longer than that. We don't recognize, I think, the geological time frame that these lakes were formed under, mm-hmm. and that they really, their levels change in. So when I was up in northwest Wisconsin as well, Shell Lake, which is a very popular, well-developed lake, was also experiencing very high water levels. And I think it's part of it is that we build our houses thinking that this is where the lake is always going to be, whereas over a longer time frame, lakes actually do grow and shrink.
And you guys are both with the UW Extension and not the Department of Natural Resources, so we can probably can't speak directly for them. But
well, and if anyone ever had questions about their lake, you can contact your local lake coordinator. So we have DNR staff in each of the regions across the state who are lake coordinators, and you can go to the DNR website to find out who those folks are, or you can come to our UW Extension Lakes website and find links there too.
I think we put that up on our Facebook page, so we can go to the Facebook page and get that, how to get to your site, and that should work out pretty well. One of the things that I was interested in, you mentioned you work with lake organizations and so forth, and I think lake organizations can be a real powerful source of good for the most part for lakes, Eric.
That's correct, and really our program within Extension only exists because there were lake organizations, and it was back in the 1970s when Wisconsin created laws that allowed citizens to create almost like little municipalities around their lake districts, where they could raise money and they could organize to do things to protect their lakes. At that time, it was recognized that we needed somebody like Extension to come out and explain to people what the legal steps were and what the ramifications would be if they formed these lake districts. But we've also had nonprofit lake associations and sort of more informal lake mm-hmm. organizations for well over 100 years, people getting together with their neighbors and taking sort of collaborative steps to protect their lake resources. So that's been a long tradition in Wisconsin. And Patrick and I both find out that there's still, you know, with thousands of lakes in Wisconsin, not every lake does have an association or a district. And so we find new ones forming all the time. People just figuring out for themselves.
Let's get together and see what we can do.
Certainly. And we basically are a resource for them, so they can always contact us in Stevens Point. But we also create publications that help walk them through the steps of forming a lake association, forming a lake district. What do you need to do? What are the best practices to keep in mind? We've learned a lot over the last several decades about what to do and what not to do, sort of what are some of the best practices. So we're a resource for that information.
And we'll talk some more about that and take up other issues as well as we look at the challenges and opportunities for Wisconsin lakes with our two guests today, Eric Olson and Patrick Goggin. We'll be back right after a quick look at the news. Stay with us. Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at the challenges and opportunities for Wisconsin lakes and talking a bit about the 2011 Wisconsin Lakes Convention coming up. We'll talk some more about that. It's April 12th. Our two guests know a lot about it, Eric Olson and Patrick Goggin. They are lake specialists with the UW Extension Lakes Program based in Stevens Point. Drove to Madison to be with us here in the studio today, so great to have them along. Certainly, again, if you have questions or comments about the lakes, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, email talk@wpr.org, or post a comment at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and we'd love to hear from you. And Nick in Superior has been waiting quite a long time, so let's go to Nick. Nick, thank you for waiting. And what's on your mind?
Thank you, Larry. Say, I have, I'm a former fisheries biologist, and there are four major issues that our lakes are facing here in Wisconsin, and those are pollution, habitat destruction, the introduction of aquatic invasive species, and global warming. Now, the first two, pollution and habitat destruction, we can reverse those. The real problems are global warming and the introduction of aquatic invasive species. I think a lot of biologists have concluded that at the rate that the globe is warming, we're looking at potentially the loss of our cold water species in Wisconsin, along with potentially cool water species. And those would be fish like the lake trout. There's a couple lakes in northern Wisconsin that have endemic populations, unique strains of lake trout. The northern Cisco could go extinct from Wisconsin inland lakes. And then there's a lot of speculation about how walleye populations will fare in the future in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. And That's good. Thank you very much for those comments, Nick. And Patrick, I'll turn to you first for comments.
Well, there's a group out there who is actually working on trying to think about issues like global warming and what it will mean for lake and water management in the state of Wisconsin. WICI is the acronym. It's failing me in terms of what that stands for. I think it's the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate, and I forget what the last I is for. But they're coming out with a set of recommendations. If you Google WICI and global warming, you'll see that this is a group that includes DNR folks, extension folks, and folks from throughout the state, USGS, et cetera. And they're trying to look at issues like this. You're right, though. Cold water fisheries are definitely something that's a big concern out there related to global climate change.
And there are some reports out. We had some guests on to talk about the WICI findings, and there are some. They've got some findings out there and some information out there online.
The other place I've seen a great presentation on the Wisconsin channel. There's been some great lectures on that channel as well.
Wisconsin Public Television, yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. All right. There you go, Nick. Thank you for calling. Scott in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Scott.
How you doing, Larry?
Good.
I just have a question. I know there was a piece recently here in the Green Bay Press Gazette about there was a court case involving a DNR and a judge where they were looking at the amount of phosphate and mercury that's entering the water system here. I think it was in particular the Fox River. And what they did is they're actually allowing more of that, you know, those elements entering the water system, and it's almost like a step backwards. And the DNR said that they can kind of overrule the Federal Clean Water Act, allowing those elements to go into the water. And really, to me, it sounds like a step backwards as far as, you know, water quality.
Mm-hmm. Comments? Eric?
Well, part of what we have in Wisconsin is a relationship between the EPA and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. The EPA is charged nationwide with carrying out the Clean Water Act. And so there are federal standards for water quality that have to be enforced. But if you look around in Wisconsin, you won't find a lot of EPA regulators sort of running around in trucks and doing actual lake investigations, in part because a lot of that authority has been delegated down to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, where they basically carry out not only Wisconsin's water laws, but also those federal laws that apply. What this case, I believe, is that's being referenced hinges on is whether or not the appeal to a DNR permit should take place solely within Wisconsin or whether that should actually take place in federal courts. And so my understanding about the specific decision was that they were saying that if you really are challenging part of the EPA component, potentially that case should be in a federal court system rather than through a state court system. And I do know that it is a bit of a challenge to always have that relationship functioning between the Department of Natural Resources and the EPA. But what we have is sort of, I think, a pretty good relationship right now. But it certainly is one that's dynamic and does change over time.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. I wanted to go back to this whole business of lake level monitoring. And one of the reasons I wanted to do that was because I think that is being featured at the or discussed at the convention. Is that correct, Patrick?
It is correct, Larry. So the way that we have 3 days of the convention, as you say, it starts April 12th and runs through April 14th in Green Bay at the KI Center. And we do a couple things over the course of those 3 days. We have plenary sessions, which everyone is in the same room, some 400 or 500 people, and we bring in experts from around the country. And then we also have workshops and breakout concurrent sessions. And one of the breakout sessions will be looking at low water levels and as well as high water levels. And one of the things we're doing is partnering with lake groups and lake citizens in monitoring lake levels over time. So one of the lessons we've learned with the high and low water here in the state is that we could have better records on some of our lakes in that regard. And so a new partnership between USGS, DNR, Extension, and lake groups around the state is going to be offered up at the convention as a step in the right direction.
And there was a collaboration of arts and sciences, and that intrigued me. What's going on there?
You know, too often I think we don't look beyond, say, something just like science and look at the other tools and neat things that we do as people and as cultures. And so one of the things we're going to do at this convention is try and look at ways we can blend the arts and science together. And so we're having several guest artists who will be exhibiting their work as part of a Northwoods show that's going to premiere at the convention. And then also that same group of artists and scientists are going to be doing a workshop over the course of the convention to talk about how they, through their careers and their different mediums as artists, create partnerships to work on conservation.
Hmm. Now, is it still possible to sign up for this, or is it...
Yes, Eric, definitely. We have open sort of registration going right up to the day of the conference. So people who are in the Green Bay area who think that they just want to come down and check this out, we're not going to restrict anyone. You can just come on down and register right at the event. But the main area to go to is our UW Extension Lakes homepage. Okay. And again, that link is right off of the Larry Mueller Show's Facebook page. But if you just searched on Google again for UW Extension Lakes, we're pretty much the top hit. And so there's an online registration form. One of the advantages of, I think, registering in advance is that we feature a number of workshops. The Lake Levels training, for example, is one of the specific workshops. And some of those do have a limit on how many people can get into a specific workshop. So you'll want to take a look at the workshops and make sure you get enrolled in advance. So I would encourage people, if they're thinking about it, to go to the webpage today and make sure they can reserve a workshop. And the topics really, in addition to arts, in addition to the science, we do cover the politics. One of our partners in protecting Wisconsin lakes is a group that was formerly called Wisconsin Association of Lakes. Now they're just mm-hmm. called Wisconsin Lakes. And they do some of the actual lobbying in the legislature. They do some of the outreach related to lake issues. And their lobbyist will be at the convention, both giving a presentation, but also taking questions. So if people wanted to know what's going on in the political process, this is one place to get plugged in.
And is there a fee connected with in starting up and going to attending?
Yeah, it's about, I don't have it in front of me, $165 for the 3 days of the convention, and that basically is a wash with the meals over the course and the room rentals and that kind of thing. So we've actually kept that price that way for about 8 or 10 years. So we're trying to realize the economic times we're in and make it affordable to folks.
We have Susan in Coon Valley, Wisconsin, up next. Hi, Susan. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Maybe your guest could comment on a couple of things regarding the water quality, the tributaries that feed into the lake, and how that relates to these large factory farms. And I'm not talking about the small farmers. I'm talking about these operations that have 2,000 to 8,000 cows, and how they're monitored. We know the DNR does not have enough staff to regulate these large factory farms, and I'm just curious if your guest could comment on that.
Sure. Patrick Goggin, go to you.
Sure. I think the kinds of operations you're talking about are the CAFOs, where we have large units of animals concentrated in an area, 500 or plus kind of animals. And certainly tributaries that would be around those kind of farms would eventually feed into our lakes, and you could have nutrient issues there. There is nutrient management law in place, though, in the state of Wisconsin that, in partnership with many of our county land and water conservation departments, for example, are monitoring those waters and monitoring those farming operations. Indeed, many of them should be enrolled and have nutrient management plans for those operations, such that we know what is going on with the way nutrients are leaving that operation and being watched. So in some regards, sometimes those big operations are under even more scrutiny just because of their size and because of their potential impact to water quality. Over time, sometimes it can be sometimes smaller operations that maybe aren't plugged into the tools that are out there through Natural Resource Conservation Service or their local land and water conservation county shop that can help them bring nutrient under control and make sure that it's taken care of on a farm operation.
Okay.
So sometimes it's those smaller ones that can be more of a problem.
And this time of year, you particularly want to be watching for people who are doing land spreading of manure and waste at what we would consider, I guess, the wrong time of year, whenever we have a real melt going on, or if it's warm weather with snow on the ground as well as rain coming in. Those are times when farmers, typically, if they have one of these nutrient management plans, they can be prohibited from doing land application during certain times of the year. And I've noticed that the state has been giving out general warnings or general sort of statements about weather conditions and how that should be affecting farmers. And people should keep an eye out for that. I know here in Dane County and southwest Wisconsin, they've had fish kills at certain times of year, typically in the spring when a lot of this manure would run off and feed into the springs and take up all the oxygen. So this is the time to be keeping your eye open. And I think you can contact your land and water conservation office at the county level, where they actually should have a lot of this information about who's under what sort of regulatory structure.
All right, there you go. Thank you very much for calling, Susan. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's see, we've got Jeremy in Oshkosh up next. Jeremy, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was wondering with the brown trout and the rainbow trout and the salmon that they plant out in Lake Michigan, if there's any actual documented natural reproduction in, say, the tributaries Lake Michigan or with the lake trout on out on the reef.
Mm-hmm. Patrick?
I wish I knew the answer. We deal mostly with the inland lakes here in the state of Wisconsin. I would look to contact a DNR fishery biologist for the entire Lake Michigan, which I'm sure you could do a search on the DNR website for that. I would guess if the population levels are strong enough in areas near those tributaries, some of that would be going on, but I don't know for sure.
We've really seen increasing work, too, along Lake Michigan shorelines to restore streams and creeks and get the water quality back up to the level that would support those populations, and also look into the obstructions that might be in their way. These fish would naturally try to sometimes go upstream and try to find good spawning habitat, but if there's a culvert in the way, if there's a bridge, a dam in particular, those things would limit their ability to get upstream. But a number of groups have really been working proactively to try to restore passages and restore water quality in those tributaries.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah.
One other comment, Larry. Every county has a fisheries biologist within the DNR, and so I would give Brown County's fisheries biologist a call, and you can find that information on the DNR website.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a caller wanted to know if you know of, we were talking about volunteer opportunities earlier, wondered if there are volunteer opportunities to work on rivers. She lives on the Grant River in Grant County, and wondering about that.
Yeah, there is. There's a program led by Extension staff called Water Action Volunteers. Chris Stepanek is the Extension outreach person who helps with. She's probably been on this show.
Oh, yeah, she's been on the show quite a few times.
And Chris has worked with rivers and stream folks across the state. So mm-hmm. if you go to the UW Extension website and look for Chris Stepanek, is their last name, or just Google Water Action Volunteers Wisconsin, I think you would find Chris's contact information. Yeah.
And there's one other effort that's really starting to heat up, and that's one that's being spearheaded by the River Alliance.
Yeah.
And what they're creating, they're calling it Project RED, or Riverine Early Detectors. And this gets back to, again, noticing when invasive species start moving into a water system. You've got to get out on that resource, either in a canoe or put on your waders and get out there, but you have to be able to look and see when these invasive species first move in. So I know River Alliance is always recruiting volunteers who want to go out and do this detection work.
If you happen, too, to have a nature center in your area, oftentimes those nature centers are clued into the opportunities there and might have some volunteer monitoring going on in their area.
All good points. From Jody in Madison, we have an email. She says, I'm wondering if you could talk about phosphorus and fertilizers, its effect on lakes. I understand the fertilizers with phosphorus are banned in over-the-counter sales in some areas in Madison, but the landscaping companies can still access them. Additionally, I understand that fertilizers labeled organic sometimes contain phosphorus. Any comment on these?
Well, we do have a new phosphorus rule in the state of Wisconsin for private landowners. So the idea is you need to show that you have phosphorus depletion on your site before you're allowed to buy a product with phosphorus in it. So now when you go to the stores or the depot centers, et cetera, most of the products being carried, you'll see the middle number, which is the phosphorus number, at zero. You spoke a little bit of why phosphorus can be important to water quality. Oftentimes that nutrient, phosphorus, is the limiting factor on whether you're going to have abundant weed growth on a water body. Certainly nitrogen's a piece of the picture too, but often phosphorus is a key to that aquatic ecosystem, and so that's why it gets the attention it does.
Yeah, I think in the Madison area you can only use phosphorus on lawns if it's a new lawn to put in.
Right, so a new lawn that's being put in, or if you can show that, if you do a soil test through our soil labs throughout the state and you can show that you have a phosphorus deficiency, then you can maybe do an application.
A caller wants to test water to prove the impact or prove or disprove the impact of a large agricultural enterprise nearby. Is there a way to do that?
Well, there's always a way, I think, to find out what's affecting your lake and how upstream sources are impacting water quality. We know in general that agricultural operations do have runoff and that it does get into streams and into the lakes, but usually it requires a pretty intensive study of a watershed before you can really find a smoking gun or determine exactly which farm or which practices are the main source of an issue. The Wisconsin DNR actually partners with lake organizations to get those types of studies going. So whether it's beginning with sort of a small-scale lake study that's going to just look at your water quality and how the trends might have been changing over time, to potentially a large-scale watershed study, the DNR has grants that allow you to design a study that's going to make sense, and citizens shouldn't feel too sort of out of their league in this case, because there's also a number of consulting agencies, operations, I should say, that want to help lake organizations understand their lake and understand what the watershed impact is. And so sometimes they're engineering firms, sometimes they're planning firms. They're really looking to partner up with lake associations and to do these types of studies. So I would say one of the things you're going to want to do before you can start saying, well, it's this operation or it's that type of agriculture, you really need to get to know your lake and get to know your watershed. The grants that we're talking about, you can find information about them on the DNR webpage. But most lake associations start out with small-scale lake planning grants. These can provide up to $3,000 in state money to do that type of research. Mm-hmm. And then as you get into the large-scale projects, those might be $10,000, and maybe you have to study it year after year, up to $100,000 worth of sort of water sample collection, sending those samples into labs to have them analyzed, and looking at what's really happening on the landscape. It can be a pretty involved process. We do encourage people, if you haven't been collecting water samples, it is through the Citizens Lake Monitoring Network that you'd probably get started in that process of collecting samples and partnering with the DNR. And we have links right on our page, and actually it's through UW Extension now that the DNR and citizens work together to monitor lake water quality. So I would say go down that road before you get too far into doing citizen science. But we do know that people want to know what's causing water quality changes.
Absolutely.
They want to participate in these types of studies. And so it's a very popular program within the DNR.
And Bill in Madison, on to you. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I live about six blocks uphill from Cherokee Marsh and Cherokee Lake. And when I was by my house at the closing, there was a codicil or some kind of section that said that I couldn't use, I think, fertilizer and pesticide on my yard. I just wondered if that's common and if those rules are ever enforced, if that has much to do with stuff like the blue-green algae in Lake Mendota.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, phosphorus certainly can be a driver in the algal growth in lakes, and certainly we've seen the situation with blue-green algae around the state heighten, and that's a real concern because there's health concerns with those blue-green algaes, both for we as humans and pets and et cetera. Not to mention it's just not that fun to swim or recreate on our lake when those kind of outbreaks are going on. Sometimes, you know, homeowners associations, for example, could have a limitation like the one you described. It could also be a local ordinance that comes through a town or municipal unit of government. So there can be different ways that that kind of ordinance might be implemented.
I think it's relatively uncommon to see homeowners associations that go this far, but it, the caller mentioned living near the Cherokee Marsh, wherever there's sensitive lands that might be disproportionately impacted, society has really tried to kind of calibrate their rules and say, look, if you're living right next to this, maybe you need to have a higher set of standards that you carry out on your landscape.
I want to get back as thank you guys so much for being with us today. We've got that Wisconsin Lakes Convention, Speaking for Lakes. It's April 12th through the 14th at the KI Convention Center in Green Bay. Go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You'll get a spot to go and find out more about that convention. Eric, Patrick, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
And thanks for listening on the Ideas Network.